We're back.
We're back.
Guess what time it is?
It's crime and time time.
It's crime and time time, and it's also tax time.
It is tax time. I don't want to talk about it.
Well, we are drinking it, so we are drinking the income tax.
The income tax.
So it's got a 1 1/4 ounce gin, which we're using Rogue Gin from Rogue River Distillery, because I was just up in Oregon, and this is the last that I have of it.
So you drank that entire thing just from when you went on your trip?
Yeah, well, we were there for a week.
Oh, you drank it while you're there. Gotcha.
Yeah. Fresh orange juice, sweet vermouth, dry vermouth, and a dash of Angostura bitters. You put it on a shaker, shake it up, strain it into a cocktail glass, and the one we're using are, we've used these before, they're the martini style cocktail glasses with little gold flecks in them. They're really pretty.
They are really pretty.
And, you know, our income tax
theme. I haven't even done mine yet. I'm bad.
I haven't either, but guess what? There's an extension, so.
Yes. I'm going to try and get them together tonight and then take them over in the morning.
Yay, I don't even want to think about it. So, yeah, that's the income tax.
The income tax. Okay,
I'm ready to try it.
All right, I have my ice.
Yeah, I'm not. It tastes like a martini with some orange juice in it.
I'm not sure what it tastes like, but it's not good.
I like martinis. I just never pictured myself drinking one with orange juice. That's what it tastes like.
It kind of tastes like a dirty sock to me.
It kind of tastes like how I feel when I have to do my income taxes.
Yes, that is a good description. I'm putting some ice in it. And maybe that will help. I'm still going to drink it because it's booze.
I forgot to save you the dirty ice. So I brought you a cup of ice.
That's okay. I'm going to stick them all in here. And we're going to dilute this baby so that it does not taste like a dirty sock.
It is not great. Yeah, it's the feeling you get when you're doing your income taxes.
Yeah. I like it when we get a good drink and we can recommend it. Oh, try this drink.
Try this drink.
Don't try this drink.
If you, for some reason, feel like suffering a little bit more.
Don't try this drink. I'm still going to drink it, though.
Well, I'm going to tell you about some notorious tax cheats while you are drinking it. And that face you're making is probably the face Leona Helmsley made when she got nabbed for tax evasion.
I thought she was a madam.
No. Leona Helmsley was just a rich lady.
Gotcha.
So she, you know, isn't that well known today, but back in the day, like in the early 80s, late 70s, she was like big, like Kardashian big.
Yes.
She had a really colorful persona. She was also known for being pretty harsh. So her nickname...
That's right. She was like the dragon lady?
Yeah. Her nickname was the Queen of Mean.
Okay.
I just remember, like, Saturday Night Live punking on her, because I was too young to really understand who she actually was. I just remember, like, them doing skits where she was, like, caricatured. So
I definitely remember the name, although I had her mixed up with somebody who was a madam.
Yeah, I can't think of who that is right now. It'll come to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was a billionaire and was convicted of tax fraud that started with small and really blatant, obvious acts of tax evasion. So... during her tax evasion trial, a former employee testified that Helmsley said, quote unquote, "We don't pay taxes. Only the little people pay taxes."
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That is exactly the opposite attitude that the tax code is designed for.
Not to Leona. So she married her husband, Harry Helmsley, in 1972. It was her fourth marriage. And Harry left his wife of almost 30 years when he married Leona. They were both already rich and
fourth marriage.
Yeah. I didn't look into her enough, but I was curious, like, I'm like, how did she get rich? Was marriage her way of getting rich?
Because
sometimes people do that.
They do.
But I don't know that. So anyway, once they got married, they became even more rich.
Oh my.
They had a whole bunch of real estate. They had like quite a few other assets. She liked to live lavishly in certain ways, but then in other ways, she was really miserly.
Yes, so, that's what I remember hearing.
Yeah.
That she was super cheap.
So one time she made a sales clerk like rewrite a bill for a pair of earrings so that she would save the $4 that she was entitled to save.
Oh my.
Even me, who definitely am not rich by any means...
It would be like, no, my time is worth more than that.
Depending on how much the earrings were. Like, if they were $4, or if they were like $8 and they were supposed to be four, I'd probably do it. But if they were like $439 and they were charging me, I'd be like, whatever, just pay it.
Yeah.
So in 1983, they bought a house. That's not a thing because I was looking at Helmsley. Maybe that's what they called their house, the house. They bought their home in Greenwich, Connecticut. They paid $11 million and they knew that it was going to cost about $8 million to renovate. So Leona got upset because it was taking so long and she didn't like the quality of the renovations. So she just refused to pay a bunch of the contractors.
Oh, that's not a thing you can do.
Yeah.
Says I'm married to a plumbing contractor.
And this is actually what started the whole chain of events that got her in trouble for tax fraud.
See, that's how those war dogs were caught too. They didn't pay the guy to repackage the bullets.
Yep. So anyway, the contractors filed a lawsuit. Several of the contractors filed a lawsuit against them. And, you know, when you file a lawsuit for somebody because of financial things come up.
Financials.
Yes. So the lawsuits claim that the work that the Helmsley's personal home was being charged as a business expense. It also alleged that the Helmsleys were purposely doing this to lower their income tax bill. And all of a sudden the IRS was like, hey, there's something for us to look into. So the IRS did a lengthy investigation and they indicted the Helmsleys on 188 counts of tax fraud in 1988. Leona also faced federal charges for extortion and mail fraud. By the time the case went to court, Harry was in pretty bad health and they deemed him incompetent to stand trial.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He must have been in very bad health.
I think so. Leona did have to go to trial, and she eventually was convicted of 33 counts of felony tax fraud, including mail fraud, tax evasion, and filing false tax returns. She was initially sentenced to 16 years in prison and had to pay $7 million in fines, but on appeal, that was reduced to 4 years. She actually only served 21 months, and then she was released in 1994.
Was she in actual prison, or was she in one of those fancy schmancy like Martha Stewart?
I didn't look, but prisons. I'm gonna guess she was in one of those fancy schmancy Martha Stewart prisons.
Which, you know what? I'll go because if
tennis,
meals cooked not good. For me, it's not. I'm getting hints of grass clippings now, along with the dirty sock.
That's probably from the gin.
The grass clippings, yeah.
So my next notorious tax cheat is Ty Warner, which that name did not ring a bell initially to me.
Warner Brothers, right?
No, Beanie Baby.
Oh.
So Ty Warner was the founder of Ty Inc., which is the Beanie Baby maker. So
I have multiples of his product upstairs.
Yes. On January 31st, 1996, he flew to Zurich and he deposited $80 million at the UBS bank. And he instructed that any correspondence about the account be held at the bank.
Interesting. When you have $80 million, why not just pay your fucking taxes? I'm sorry. You can afford it. You have $80 million.
You can afford it. In 2002, UBS Bank, they signed up for this program that required the bank to share information about U.S. depositors with the U.S. federal authorities. So Ty Warner went to Europe. He took all his money out of that bank and he put it in a different Swiss bank that had fewer U.S. ties.
He's not trying to hide anything.
And he didn't have it listed under his name. He had it listed in the name of a Liechtenstein trust. So he's trying to make this money not...
And his product was so popular.
Oh, beyond.
People were still buying it.
That was going to be people's retirement.
Yes, I remember. We have Beanie Babies that you can hunt. So if you can hunt it and kill it legally, we have a Beanie Baby of
it. That is true, yeah. I remember that now. So for more than a decade, he kept the $80 million a secret from the IRS and from his own accountants, which is sketch.
Yeah.
He evaded at least $5.6 million in federal taxes just on the interest earnings.
Oh, I was going to say that's nothing.
Yeah.
For $80 million, five is nothing.
That's just on the interest that he accrued.
I have a theory that I could live very happily for the rest of my life on $5 million. I could live off the interest of the $5 million.
For sure. So by 2008, this account had grown to $107 million. And
oh my gosh.
In October of 2013, he admitted to all of the back taxes that he owed. He agreed to pay $53.5 million in penalties and a $16 million in back taxes and interest. By 2013, he was still worth $2.5 billion, but the thing that the IRS was never able to discover and what Warner never disclosed was how he even got that $80 million to begin with.
Oh, it didn't come from the Beanie Babies?
Don't know.
He never said.
He never said.
Oh, that's crazy.
So the next one is...
his employee retirement.
Yeah. The next one is Pete Rose. So everyone, you know, in my era knows Pete Rose. He was one of the most famous pro baseball players ever.
I did not know he got in trouble for taxes.
He certainly did.
I knew he got in trouble for gambling, but I didn't know he got in trouble for taxes.
Yeah, so when you hear, when you think about him, that's the first thing that comes to mind, aside from Major League Baseball player. It was like, oh, he bet on his own team. He got in trouble. Which...
didn't he bet against his own team?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Allegedly.
Right.
So, yeah, he originally signed with the Cincinnati Reds, and when he did that, they won the series in the World Series in 1975 and 1976. So, at 37 years of age, which was old back then to still be playing Major League Baseball, he signed with the Philadelphia Phillies and became the highest paid player in Major League Baseball. And in his second season there, they won the World Series. So, by his retirement, he had won 3 World Series, he played in the World Series 6 times, and he made 17 All-Star teams.
Wow.
But
he's a good player.
He would never make it to the Hall of Fame because he bet on baseball.
Yes.
And the official report, it was called the Dowd Report, it was issued in 1989. It concluded that Rose had bet on 52 games involving the Reds while he was a player and manager. He was banned from baseball for a lifetime.
Wow.
And so now here comes his tax issues. So in 1989, Pete Rose pled guilty to failing to report $354,968 in income from autographs and memorabilia sales and from his personal appearances.
Wow.
So he underpaid his taxes by $162,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he pled guilty. The government dismissed more serious charges of tax evasion. And all in all, he could have actually gone to prison for what he did, but he ended up being sentenced to 5 months. He was fined $50,000, and he was sentenced ultimately to a halfway house for 3 months and then had to do 1,000 hours of community service and pay all his back taxes.
Do you think he really had to live at the halfway house?
I don't know. It's like, it'd be weird, right? You're like... in a halfway house because you got out of prison, or you're like, you know, and Pete
Rose.
Your roommate's
Pete Rose.
Yeah.
That's crazy. How do these people think they can get away with this?
I don't understand why they even want to.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, like, I love paying taxes.
No.
But you have to.
You have to. And you have the money to do it. Mm-hmm. Just pay it when you have it. Don't wait until your career is over. Like, I'm assuming you have the next person that I'm thinking of. A famous country music star.
I think I do.
Yeah. When you have that money, when you're making the money, just pay the taxes. Don't wait.
So the next one I have, though, is Joe Francis. So he, if you remember his name, was the founder of the popular, for some reason, Girls Gone Wild franchise.
I forgot that he got in trouble for taxes. I remember hearing about this on the news.
Yeah. Before I even mention his tax problems, he has also been sued numerous times by women over being filmed without consent and also being filmed as minors. In 2013, he was convicted of false imprisonment and assault causing great bodily injury and dissuading a witness. So he's not a good guy.
Slime bucket. Totally.
Yeah. He was sentenced for that thing. He was sentenced to 270 days in jail, 36 months probation, anger management, and psychological counseling. And after being interviewed post-trial... by the Hollywood Reporter, he said that the jurors were, quote, mentally retarded, unquote.
Oh my gosh!
And that, quote, they should be euthanized.
Oh, he's horrible.
But don't worry, he apologized for saying that.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm so glad. You want them to be killed, but I'm glad you said you're sorry.
In 2007 is when his tax trouble started. He was indicted on 2 counts of tax evasion, for over $20 million in allegedly false deductions. He pled not guilty, and he blamed his former accountant all in all, he ended up pleading to misdemeanor counts. He had to pay $250,000 in restitution to the IRS and, like, obviously all the taxes that he owes. That's the thing. So you try to evade or try to, you know, whatever, you don't just get the penalty. You have to still pay all the taxes you owe.
You have to pay the taxes and the interest and the penalty.
Yes.
So it's worse. And how are these, because all of these people, I'm sure, have accountants. They would have to have accountants. Mm-hmm. How do they get it past their accountants? Because their accountants have to sign that they are aware of everything that they're reporting, that they know, yes, that they know it's to be true.
Well, this next guy, he probably should have been more aware, but I do feel a little bit bad for him, and that is actor Wesley Snipes.
So, I forgot he got in trouble for that, too.
Yeah. So from 1999 to 2001, he avoided $7 million in taxes. And kind of, the government kind of went after him because he was a celebrity to, like, teach a lesson because...
Oh, for sure.
Unfortunately, the accountant that he used and this other anti-tax advocate basically convinced him that what he was doing was right. But it was not right.
Yeah.
He kind of got, like, I mean, he should have been more aware, but he did kind of get taken.
Yeah, that's not cool to, I mean, somebody has to be punished, but I'm hoping the accountant also got punished.
Yeah, so they did. The two advisors claimed that Snipes didn't legally have to pay taxes. They were Eddie.
Oh.
Yeah.
I want that deal.
They were Eddie Ray Kahn and Douglas P. Rosile. They were both convicted of tax fraud and conspiracy, and they received longer prison terms than Snipes did.
Good.
But Snipes did have to go to, or he was sentenced to 3 years in prison. I don't think he probably stayed in prison that long.
Yeah.
Nobody does. And then, I don't know how to say their last name, because I'm not a person that watches this show, but Teresa and Joe.
Judice?
Judice. Is mm-hmm. that how you say it? Yeah. From the Real House.
Well, there's Judice, which is what they started to say, and then they eventually changed it to Judici, or something like that.
Oh, they wanted to make
they wanted it more ethnic, more Italian.
Anyway, they're from the Real Housewives of New Jersey, in yes. case you did not know that. You obviously did.
I do. I watch the shows.
They were indicted on 39 counts of conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud, which is way worse. I mean, like, they get you on that more than they get you on tax stuff.
Yeah.
Bank fraud and making false statements on loan applications and bankruptcy fraud in 2013. So
yeah, it was not good.
It's not good. Their indictment alleged that they intentionally concealed businesses that they owned and they concealed their income. There were also these other charges against Joe for failure to file federal tax returns in 2004 through 2008, which was that kind of like the beginning of their whole show starting?
Yes. Yeah, I think they started it when they started with the show. I don't know if it was to make themselves look wealthier
yeah.
or what the deal was. But he was not even a U.S. citizen.
Correct. I read that, actually. I think I have it on
yeah,
here.
Yeah, he got deported.
So they eventually took a plea deal that included jail time for both of them, but they were able to stagger their jail time so that one parent could still be home with their children. They have four kids. Mm-hmm. The tax charges were actually the least serious, as I mentioned. But for the loan thing, they would claim that they were employed and receiving salaries that they actually weren't. And they used fake W-2 forms and fake pay stubs.
That's insane.
That is so wrong. And then their 2009 bankruptcy, they also concealed businesses that they owned. And they hid rental income. And her income from the Real Housewives and like all the stuff that went with that was...
She did cookbooks and yeah. drinks. She had a Bellini line.
Personal appearances, da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
That was all omitted from their bankruptcy stuff.
Oh, my. Well, according to the show, he was doing all this without her knowledge. And she had to go to prison for what he did without her knowledge.
That's convenient.
Yeah. I doubt that it was true, because if they're hiding her income...
Yeah, you would, I mean, unless she said, here's my W-2s from working on this show,
right.
go take it to the tax person.
And then he didn't.
But.
She got very fit in prison, though. She came out and continued her fitness routine and did a bikini contest at like 45 or something like
well,
that.
Well, good for her.
I know.
So, the next person we're going to talk about is Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson!
Legendary country singer Willie Nelson. He is a famous IRS.
Yeah. He's the one that I was thinking of that he should have just paid it when he was making the money, because by the time they went after him, he didn't necessarily have that still.
Yes. Yeah, so he, but his also, to me, was a little, I'm not going to excuse it, but so what he did is he put money in a tax shelter, but that tax shelter was later, it became illegal after the fact.
That's not right. If it was legal at the time that he did it, it should, I mean...
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe like, there's a fine or something.
I don't understand enough about it to understand, but that's what it said. And so he had a $16 million tax bill, but the IRS were convinced to accept $6 million in cash, but Willie Nelson didn't have $6 million in cash. So at one point, the IRS was going to come in and like basically take all of Willie Nelson's assets. So Willie Nelson isn't even home at this time. He's in Hawaii playing golf.
Uh-huh.
And so he calls his daughter and says, take my guitar, Trigger, and send it to me. And so he's like, she shipped it to him in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
And then his home got raided. They took all his assets. And he said, as long as I got my guitar, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
So anyway, he got to keep his guitar. He got his ranch back because they auctioned the ranch to... you know, help make this $6 million.
Uh-huh.
And the bidder turned out to be like this huge Willie Nelson fan. And also like a group of farmers that were...
I was going to say there was some sort of aid benefit thing
yeah,
for him.
Yeah, because he helped organize farm aid back when the farms were failing. And so they did it as a thank you to him. And then in 1991, I do remember this, Willie Nelson released an album titled The IRS Tapes, Who'll Buy My Memories? So it was a compilation of his, like some of his best hits. It was a greatest hits kind of thing, but... Uh-huh. So that was like one of the first times the IRS agreed to a revenue sharing agreement with somebody that owed them money.
Oh,
so
interesting.
They agreed like that they would get a certain portion of all the benefits from that album.
Keep and, working and we'll recoup it then.
Yeah, which was actually like nice of them.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, by 1993, Willie Nelson had managed to pay off all the debts. It wasn't all because of the album. He did have to like do some other things, but he's a... never had to go to prison or anything. So I do, like I said, I did feel kind of bad for him also because the way I was reading it, it was like, could have been avoidable, but also like maybe he didn't understand.
Right. But if he did this when it was still legal or when it was legal and then it became illegal, that's something his accountant should have said, hey, we need to move this money because blah, blah, blah. They changed the law.
Yeah, we can't do this. And then finally, the most famous tax cheat, Al Capone.
Yes.
Alphonse Gabriel Capone, better known as Al Capone, and also public enemy number one, is like usually the first thing that comes to mind when you think about income tax evasion.
Yeah. But, okay, go ahead and tell your story, and then I'll tell my opinion on him.
Well, I don't have much. I just went through his tax stuff. But obviously, you know that he had all these criminal charges. And even though he led this lavish lifestyle... he never filed a tax return and claimed that he did not have any taxable income, but...
well, he made his income illegally.
But under the U.S. tax code, income is reportable even if it comes from illegal activity.
Oh, interesting. Okay, didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the one thing I got out of this.
Interesting. Well, there's also that guy who won Survivor the first time, Richard Hatch.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him.
He went to prison because he didn't pay taxes on his earnings, his winnings from the... from a ridiculously famous television show that
literally
that
everybody in America watched.
Yes.
Let's see what else. So he was indicted on 22 counts of federal income tax evasion. Previous to this, Al Capone never really spent much time in prison. He was able to just get like really short sentences, and every time he was in prison, he was able to bribe the like the COs and whatever to get preferential treatment. Like he was able to get a typewriter in his cell and, you know, rugs and, like, you know, comfortable furniture.
I've seen pictures of his prison cells. They look like a living room.
Yeah. So this time the judge was like, I'm not taking a plea agreement. So they sentenced him to 11 years. He also had to pay, you know, all the back money that he owed. And so he goes to this prison, federal prison in Atlanta, and he continues to bribe guards to get what he wants. Like I said, he got a mirror, typewriter, a set of encyclopedias, rugs, but the judge was like, no, like, you're not doing that again. So that's when he got sentenced to Alcatraz.
Right.
And at Alcatraz, they didn't play like that.
Yeah.
And so finally, I'm just going to leave you with Al Capone's quote regarding taxes. They can't collect legal taxes from illegal money.
Makes sense to me.
But that's not what the tax code says, so.
That's funny.
Pay your taxes.
Pay your taxes. All right. So that's, I might mention Al Capone as well.
I figured you probably would, so I didn't like go into too much detail.
I'm just briefly going over him. So anyway, my sources, Benjamin Franklin quotes about taxes, history of income tax, historical highlights of the IRS, IRS timeline, Commissioner of Revenue, how national income tax began under President Taft, how did the Internal Revenue Service begin, Wikipedia, brief history, Thought Company, brief history, Investopedia. There was one that I could not understand it. It was all very like technical and I just shut it off. I'm like, I'm not even going
to
read you.
I had one like that too and I forgot
I'm not even going to read you.
I forgot to mention mine. The ones I actually used were primarily like Forbes.com and Wikipedia. And the one on Willie Nelson was something else and I do not remember it and I didn't write it down. So,
how prohibition was enforced, how taxes evaded, enabled alcohol prohibition, history of the IRS, and 10 weirdest taxes in history. I tend to use way too many sources, but I like to be complete.
Thorough.
Yes. So Benjamin Franklin has many quippy quotes, but his most famous one that fits our drink today, or one of the most famous one that fits our drinking today, which is not beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy, which is my personal motto, is in this world, nothing is certain but death and taxes.
Oh, I don't think I really thought through that was his quote.
That's his quote. Yes. And yes, that's true. Taxes go back before we had written records. Taxes go back. Ancient Egypt would put taxes on, but they didn't collect money. They collected things like grain and livestock and oil. There are some of the surviving hieroglyph tablets that we have are about taxes.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yes.
People never change.
People never change. It talks about how much people paid. Some things are talking about people complaining about their taxes. And the taxes were often so high that one surviving hieroglyph tablet, the tax collectors are depicting as punishing peasants for not having paid their taxes on time. There's an ancient Sumerian proverb that says, you can have a lord, you can have a king, but the man to fear the most is the tax collector.
100%.
Yes.
As my story illustrates.
As your story illustrates. Yes, that's hysterical. So, again, taxes. Queen Boadica of the British Isles decided to defy the Romans in 60 CE. They came and they destroyed her kingdom. They publicly flogged her. They did horrible, despicable things to her two daughters. And she still did not pay her taxes.
Wow.
She retaliated by leading her people in an all-out bloody revolt, eventually killing 70,000 Romans. Boadica was a bad bitch.
That is one way to get out of paying your taxes.
Exactly. Lady Godiva was also known to protest taxes. She rode through the town naked in protest to her husband's taxes, saying that they were too high.
I mean, if that works, I'll do it.
Right? And the nation that we are sitting in right now is basically founded because we were pissed off about taxes. There was the Intolerable Acts and the Stamp Act and the Boston Tea Party, and we were just very annoyed. So then we wrote a government called the Articles of Confederation where the federal government could not collect taxes. And they had to say, hey, states, will you give us some money?
Please give us some money.
And the state said, no.
No, we don't have to.
So we threw that government out and started the Constitution. And
that's true, though. If taxes weren't compulsory, nobody
would
pay.
No one would pay them. Yes, as they didn't. And then Alexander Hamilton. Daughter number one told me I had to say it that way because daughter number two is obsessed with the play. Obsessed.
Which I saw it's coming to Sacramento. Routine.
We have to figure out a way to take them.
It's expensive.
Oh, yeah, maybe not. Hey, become our patron. Donate to daughter number two getting to go see Hamilton because she's obsessed with it. Her gymnastics routine is Hamilton. Or don't. Anyway. He was trying to figure this out. So he wanted he was the Secretary of Treasury at the time, and he wanted to figure out a way to get taxes. This led to a series of, they figured alcohol was the best way to do this.
Okay.
and farm products, etc. So this led to a series of asking for taxes, people revolt. Ask for taxes, people revolt. And this went on and on throughout. There was the Whiskey Rebellion. There was Shays Rebellion. There was a whole bunch of other rebellions. It continued throughout the rest of the century. In 1812, Congress passed a new internal taxes on refined sugar, cartridges, distillers, and auction sales. And they introduced the Commission of Revenue to collect them. However, during the War of 1812, the British came in and burned down the Treasury building.
Oh, yeah. There goes that.
There goes that. So then on December 23rd, 1817, Congress repealed all of the remaining taxes and dissolved the commission. They're like, we're not getting anything. It's just leading to revolt and blah, blah, blah. Well, we keep going and keep going. And then the 1860s come along and there's the Civil War.
Yes.
Which is, wars are one of the main reasons for taxes. We've got to figure out a way to pay for this. So President Lincoln pushes for an income tax to help cover the cost of the war. He gets Congress to pass the Revenue Act of 1861, which instituted our nation's first official income tax. It was not collected until the following year with the passage of the Tax Act of 1862. In order to collect these new taxes, on July 1st, 1862, President Lincoln signed into law the second revenue measure that brought about the internal taxes and created a permanent tax system and board to get them. They also taxed feathers, gunpowder, billiard tables, and leather.
Gunpowder. See, okay.
Feathers? Beds, I guess?
I kind of disagree about the gunpowder because I feel like that was a necessity at the time.
Well, especially for the people living on the frontier, that's how they get their food.
Like some of the other stuff, you can either get your own way, like you can pluck your chickens. A cow.
Yeah.
And make leather, but buying leather would have been a luxury.
Yes. Well, and it actually didn't affect that many people. It was the Tax Act of 1862. It specified income tax would be required for those that earned up to $10,000 to pay the government 3% of their income, and while those who made $10,000 and over would pay 5% of their income.
Can we go back to the 3 and 5% brackets?
Right. And then there was a $600 standard deductible. So you got to deduct $600 just off the bat. The next year, July 17th, 1862, Congress established the Office of the Commission of Internal Revenue. And George S. Boutwell was appointed the first commissioner. So he was our first
IRS commissioner.
It was amended several times over the years. And it was finally repealed in 1872. War was over. We paid for it. We don't need it anymore. Get it out of there.
First time taxes were repealed ever.
Yeah. So, well, no, because there's the whole, you give us taxes, we rebel. You give us taxes, we rebel series in the 1700s. So then from 1868 to 1913, most of our taxes came from booze.
I get that.
Because they put taxes on booze. They did try to reinstate an income tax after the Panic of 1893, and the economic downturn was caused a quarter of the nation's labor force to lose their jobs. However, they instituted this tax, tried to enforce it. Rosen notes in his 2018 biography of Taft, populist Democrats argued that tariffs and excise taxes the government was depending on for revenue was put a disproportionate burden on the farmers and the workers, because they're the ones that are making this and growing the stuff to make the booze and the other things that we import and
export.
Well,
it does, because they're taxing every level of production.
Yeah.
And then, you know, those same farmers are
taxed.
Yeah. The farmers are also consumers too. They like, you know, they purchase things too.
Mm-hmm.
So it does disproportionately affect them.
Yes. So they argued that a tax that would capture more affluent people's income. So in 1894, they joined forces with the Progressive Republicans to pass a legislation that created a 2% tax income, 2% tax on incomes over $4,000, and reduced the tariffs at the same time. However, In 1895, Pollock v. Farmers Loan and Trust Company went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says, this is unconstitutional. So now they've got to figure out a way to get around the Constitution. In 1894, the Wilson-Gorman Tariff Act mandated a 2% flat tax on all incomes over $4,000. It was passed by the House, and when it went to the Senate, they just gutted it out. So they're still kind of struggling with this, and they continue to struggle with this. In 1906, President Theodore Roosevelt was elected, and he was very progressive in his thinking. Howard Taft saw a populist movement for tax reform. He knew in 1909, President Taft, who is now president, knew they had to figure out a way to do this because the farmers and whatnot are being taxed on every portion of production and then taxed when they buy it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely disproportionately affects them. Then you look at like the wealthy people and they're not doing any of the production. So they're only being taxed on what they use.
And they can afford it. Doesn't matter.
And they can afford it.
Yeah. Doesn't matter to them. So Congress also passed a 1% tax on corporations who were earning more than $5,000. And this was a way to get around that constitutional issue. But President Wilson, when he decided to run for president, he ran on let's change the Constitution so that we can get this income tax going. And he proposed the 16th Amendment of the Constitution, and it was ratified in February 1913. It said, Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, so there you go, even illegal activity, mm-hmm. without apportionment among several states without regard to any census or enumeration. So that was the issue. It was tied to population. And now it's untied to population.
Yeah, it's your
so
personal income.
Yes. This granted the Congress specific power to impose income tax without regard to the population. February of 1913, 36 states ratified it to change the Constitution, and six more came in March. Out of the 48 states at the time, 42 ratified it. This set the rate at 1% on personal income, but it also set aside a personal exemption of $3,000 that exempted virtually the entire middle class. For incomes $20,000 and higher, it imposed a surtax on top of the 1% of up to 6%. And in 1913, they created the first 1040 form.
I feel like we could all agree to go back to that.
Right? I would be fine with that.
I'd pay the 6% even if I... Yes. Let's do it.
7% total? Here you go. Not a problem at all. So by 1918, America's government revenue generated from the income tax is $1 billion. So, guess what they no longer need?
Don't know.
Taxes on booze.
Oh, yes. Which that's convenient because they're pretty much not about to have booze. But
which
wait.
Is the reason so, why they got rid of it.
I just put two and two together.
Yes, they did not want to have booze anymore. So this income tax
was a way for them to be able to make that happen.
Do it. Yes, exactly.
Wow, crime and timers. This is like a revelation.
Right? I had no idea either.
So income tax caused prohibition.
Income tax caused prohibition. Yes.
That's insane.
And we're going to find out something else too. So, war is coming. 1917, the Internal Revenue Bureau, which is what it was called at the time, launched a statewide public education program to help citizens understand, hey, your taxes are going up. Here's why. We have to pay for the soldiers. They introduced a pamphlet called The 4-Minute Man, and it was distributed across America to appeal to people's sense of national pride and patriotism.
It's your patriotic duty to pay your share.
It is. So the Revenue Act of 1819 raised even greater sums for the World War I effort. It codified all existing tax laws and imposed a progressive income tax structure of up to 77%.
Oh.
they're getting some money now.
That's a lot.
By 1918, government revenue generated from the income tax exceeded $1 billion for the first time. And by 1920, it was over $5 billion. So this is when they said, we can ditch booze. Because we don't need it anymore.
They tried.
They did. So in 1918, they also moved the date for paying from March 1st to March 15th. In 1919, the states ratified the 18th Amendment, barring the manufacture, sale, or transport of intoxicating beverages. We went dry. Congress passed the Volstead Act and gave the Commission of Internal Revenue the responsibility for enforcing prohibition. So the IRS, what becomes the IRS, was in charge of making sure that you did not get to have a beer after work.
So they've never been popular.
No, they weren't. They instituted a bureau training. The bureau hired hundreds of prohibition agents to enforce the law, and they created a new intelligence department that not only uncovered bootleggers, but corrupt internal revenue agents.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that part I get. Yeah. It would have been very tempting.
Oh my gosh, these people are handing you $100 bills.
Yes.
To let them have their booze. The unit was plagued by corruption and lack of training and underfunding, and the laws were hardly enforced. People were sympathetic to these citizens that were being policed. The Coast Guard also worked alongside to try and stop prohibition. But in 1929, the onus of the enforcement shifted from the IRS, well, what becomes the IRS, to the Department of Justice. And that's when Ellie Ness takes over.
Oh, okay.
And we get the whole Untouchables thing. With Ness and his team, the Untouchables, prohibition agents whose name derived from the fact that they were untouchable to bribery because they were, like, not going to be bribed.
So were they just paid really well so that they...
Probably.
They would have had to have been, right?
I would think... Well, yeah, because it's so easy to take that money from these bootleggers because they have all of the money.
Yeah.
So all of the money. Yes, speaking of all of the money, Al Capone... he was sentenced to 11 years, $50,000 fine in order to pay $215,000 in back taxes and interest.
Which in today's money is a
stupid
crap
amount.
Ton. Yeah.
Yes. That is what it says. $215,000 equals crap ton. In 1930, the IRS got a new state-of-the-art building. In June 1st, 1930, the main section of the building was open. 16 months ahead of schedule, it cost $6 million. It had a fire alarm system, 1,400 telephones, and a system of 861 synchronized clocks.
That's super important to make sure clocks are synchronized.
Clocks have to be synchronized. However, that little thing in 1929 where the stock market crashed happened.
Ooh, forgot about that.
Yes, and then suddenly, no one is working. If no one's working,
there's
what
no
do
income.
Not have? Yes. So in 1933, they said, hey, you know, we could tax booze.
They're like, I know, I have this idea.
So,
also bring back booze.
Prohibition was ended. Once again, the reason was taxes. The IRS again resumed response. Well, it's not the IRS yet. It's the Bureau of Internal Revenue. They also resumed responsibility for taxing alcohol, and they also brought in tobacco and firearms at that time.
The Bureau of ATF.
Yes, which it breaks off later, but right now it's under the
I didn't know
umbrella
was,
of the Bureau of
I didn't
of
know
Internal
it was
Revenue.
Born under the IRS.
It was born under the IRS is its mommy. On August 14th, 1935, FDR signed the Social Security Act. This taxed employees 1% of their first $3,000 in earnings, and it required a new withholding system.
Oh.
So they started doing that. That did not translate to regular taxes until 1944, but it laid the foundation for what was to become your regular withholding.
I don't mind the withholding. I just mind the tax confusion because I feel like the withholding should cover everything.
Yes.
And then anything else, like if you had anything to deduct, that should be returned to you.
Right. But there's got to be a way that you can figure out to do it so that you don't owe them and they don't owe you, because then they're collecting interest on your money.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess like there's certain instances where they're not going to know you have this deduction. Like, you know, you get them for like solar panels or whatever. They're not going to know that till the end of the year. But like, they know your income because it's a paycheck. So they, yeah. Well, I mean, some people get other incomes, but like, if you're a household, like my husband and I, we get all our income from our paychecks. But at the end of the year, we go and do our taxes and they're like, oh, you still owe us money.
Yeah.
But I'm like,
but you've taken our money already.
Yeah.
Take enough so that you don't need to continue to take more.
Take the right amount.
Yeah. But anyway, so around this same time that FDR is doing all this Social Security stuff to help bring us out of the Depression, World War II happens. And he had a goal of paying for 50% of the war from taxes. So he passes the Revenue Act of 1942. This was the greatest tax bill of American history at the time. It increased taxes and the number of Americans subject to the income tax. And it also created the deductibles for medical and investment expenses. It also introduced the victory tax, which was 5% surcharge on all net incomes over $624. But they gave you a post-war credit. So if we made it through the war and everything, and we were still American, not German, you can apply to get some money back.
Oh, like work really hard at winning the war if you want this money back.
Yes. Which thankfully they did, so that we're not saying German words.
Yeah.
So then they did some other tax modernization and whatnot. And in 1948, the Bureau introduced a punch card system. The Bureau of Internal Revenue was one of the early adopters of technology.
I can tell.
Yeah. So they started
using computers.
Yeah. They started this punch card system in 1948, which is insane. They also installed photocopier machines. And by 1949, they were all using electric typewriters.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Which are way nicer, by the
way. Way nicer, yes. And by 1950, they had computers for tabulation. 1950, they had computers.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. The Bureau of Internal Revenue was officially changed in the 1950s to the
Internal Revenue Service.
Internal Revenue Service. And the population was just booming in the 1950s, and they were just doing
Hence
well.
The term baby boomer.
Baby boomer. In 1952, President Truman proposed his reorganization plan number one, which replaced the patronage system at the IRS with a career civil service system. And it also decentralized the service so that people could restore confidence in the agency. During the 50s, they launched a major education program where they went out to junior highs and high schools and taught kids about taxes.
Well, they don't do that anymore.
They do not, because I remember teaching an eighth grade class where I said something about taxes and the kids are like, what is that? So we spent probably like a half a day just talking about taxes, and they just kept asking me questions and questions and questions. Because yeah. I would always say, don't write on that desk. That belongs to the taxpayers. And they're like, what? They didn't understand that that's where it comes from.
Everything that the government funds is being funded by the taxpayers.
Yes. I'm like, your mom paid for that desk, so stop writing on it. So in 1955, the current tax day was set to April 15th. Modernization and efficiency continued. In 1959, Congress and the Secretary of the Treasury approved the IRS plans to install nationwide automatic data processing equipment. And by January 1962, automatic processing was in full-time operation. It could process 680,000 characters a second.
That's crazy.
Yeah, in the 60s. On May 1st, 1961, President Kennedy was the first president to visit the IRS.
That's
as far
weird.
As I know, he's the last one to do it as well.
That's weird.
So he's the only guy that went.
And look what happened to him.
Right?
Conspiracy
That's why
theory.
They did it. That's why he was assassinated. In 1962, the Tingle Tables were introduced.
Oh.
No, it is not a place where the poor little workers get to go have some stress relief.
The did you write tables, that in there?
Yes, I did. Because that is a funny joke. I want to have a Tingle Table at work. So anyway, this man, James Tingle, created this prototype in his backyard. And what it is you've got a little bitty tiny workspace. And then you've got this fan around you of all these like inboxes. And underneath the little inboxes, there are drawers. And so as you're processing, you can just pop it in the appropriate box. And then people walk up and down the halls and pick them up. It increased the efficiency like
It sounds cool. Definitely it's a relic of the past, but it sounds really cool.
Yes. Well, they're still using it. It's been in use for over 50 years. Oh, they still have it. Tingle tables. Yeah. In 1972, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Division were separated from the IRS to become the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms. In 1974, Congress passed the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, and that gave regulatory responsibilities for employee benefit plans to the IRS. In 78, they installed the Remittance Processing System, and this was a mail sorting system. They put them in all the centers across the United States. This system could process tax return sorting in mail, because by this time it's mostly still coming in the mail. Mm-hmm. 22,000 pieces of mail per hour, the 98% accuracy rate.
Wow.
People at the time were doing 1,200 an hour.
That's crazy.
This was a massive improvement. In 1986, President Reagan signed the Tax Reform Act, which was the most significant piece of legislation for tax reform since in 30 years. The act achieved revenue neutrality by decreasing individual income tax rates and eliminating $30 billion in annual loopholes. It also increased corporate taxes, capital gains tax, and miscellaneous excises. It overall drastically reduced the number of deductions and lowered the number of income tax brackets, with a top rate of individuals was lowered from 50 to 28%, while the bottom rate was raised from 11 to 15. So they're kind of spreading it out more. They created tax incentives to encourage Americans to invest in owner-occupied housing relative to rental. So this is where you get your mortgage credit.
Oh, okay.
And it raised the overall revenue from 54.9 billion by 54.9 billion the first year it was enacted.
Wow.
Yeah. It also laid the framework for electronic filing. By 1991, electronic filing had completely taken off, and by 1992, you were allowed to file electronically even if you owed money.
I remember doing it on the telephone.
Really?
Yes. So you would call up the number and, you know, you type in all the numbers for everything. It would ask you, okay, what's this? What's that? Uh-huh. What's this? What's that? And then it would tell you like, okay, I was in college and poor, and it would say, you get, you know, $89 back. Does that sound right? Bloop. Yes.
Wow. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
There was one year I did not pay taxes when I was in college. I didn't file them, and I just forgot. I was busy.
You probably didn't owe them, though, so it's probably fine.
No, I'm sure I didn't.
I mean, the IRS
left money on the table. But
their IRS is going to know now.
I know. They're going to come after me.
But guess what? If you don't owe taxes, they don't care.
They don't care. And I have no idea what year it was. I don't know how much I made. Yeah. So in 1998, they went through a restructuring act, which enabled taxpayer rights and called for reorganization of the agency. In the year 2000, they enacted reforms, ending its geographic-based structure and instituting four major operation divisions. Wage and investment, small business and self-employed, large and mid-sized business, and tax-exempt government entities. They just kept going with this different things. By 2003, 52.9 million tax returns had the child credit. So the child credit was enacted in 2003, and that affected 59.2 million tax returns. In 2015 alone, the IRS processed approximately 240 million returns, collecting $3.3 trillion in revenue. But yet we're passing bills that are like $14 trillion. We're only bringing in three.
Yeah, we just spent like $3.1 trillion.
Yeah. Sin taxes continue to be a moneymaker. Federal tobacco taxes were first enacted in 1794, and in 2020, the rate was $6.96 per pack.
Wow.
That's just the federal taxes. That does not include what your states might put on them.
And our state likes to tax.
Yes, they do. Spirits and wine and beer are taxed at different rates for both federal and state. In 2020, the top federal excise tax rates were $13.50 per proof of gallon of spirits. $1.07 to $3.15 for wine, and $18 per 31-gallon tub of beer. The federal gasoline tax was implemented in June 1932 under Herbert Hoover and the Revenue Act of 1932. The gasoline tax was raised $150 million in tax revenue for the government. States also taxed gasoline. In 1932, it was raised at a rate from 1 cent per gallon. By 2020, it's 18.4 cents.
Yes, states.
Just the feds.
States also tax gasoline because
they do.
Gas in Oregon was like $1.50 a gallon cheaper than what we're paying here.
That's insane.
Also, they don't pay sales tax in Oregon. So
they do not.
When I decided to buy something, I was like taken aback by, like, I bought this sweatshirt. It was like $35.
And they charge you $35
and I'm
for
like,
it?
What?
It's not $37.82? Yeah. So over the years, some very odd things have been taxed. In ancient Rome, urine was taxed. It was used for tanning and laundering. And even teeth brushing.
Now, did they tax the producer or did they?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, it's free to produce.
It is free to produce. In fact, I need to produce some right now. In a bid to westernize the appearance of Russian society, Emperor Peter the Great taxed beards.
Oh.
If you wanted to continue to wear your beard, you would have to pay a tax on it. Henry VIII also had a beard tax in Tudor England. The upper classes tended to think of the lower classes as smelly, and so they, and this may have had to do with a 141-year tax on soap.
Well, okay, I disagree with that tax. Soap is a necessity.
Soap is a necessity. A heavy tax was placed on the sudsy stuff, and it priced out the poorer folks.
That's sad.
Yes.
That's wrong.
Yes. So, indeed, it was such a heavy tax that soap makers began to make their product off the books for the black market, after which tax collectors took to locking the lids of the soap and boiling it in pans overnight. They also taxed Chinese people.
Just for being Chinese.
From 1885 to 1923, Canada imposed a tax that they tactfully called the Chinese head tax on all immigrants from China. Just because Chinese settlers had to pay $50, which rose to $500 by 1903 after settling and earning as little as a dollar in salary.
Wow.
As soon as you earn, you have to pay. Hats. You were not able to put a price on style, but in 1784, the English government put a price on men's hats. And the price tax changed according to the value and type of headgear. Winters in 17th century England were colder and people taxed fireplaces. Or fireplaces were taxed. There was a window tax in 1696, and that caused people to brick up their windows.
Oh my gosh, you got taxed for how many windows you had?
Taxed for how many windows and chimneys you had, yes. For a short period in the 19th century, the princely state of Travancore, India, women of the lower class were taxed if they wanted to cover up their boobs in public.
I don't know what to say about that.
One woman was so incensed by the tax that she cut off her own breast and handed it to the tax collector on a palm leaf.
Wow, that's... Yeah.
She died. In medieval England, if you did not want to go to war, you would pay the coward tax. The Lord Protector of England, Scotland, and Ireland, Oliver Cromwell, taxed his enemies. He levied a 10% income tax to anyone who was a royalist. If your household was known to support the royals,
you got taxed.
And in ancient Egypt, there was a small fry levy from the land of gold and jewels on cooking oil. So if you wanted to fry your food, you had to pay and use fats in other things. You had to pay taxes.
Oh my gosh.
So stupid taxes all around the world, all the time. So when you're filling out your tax returns this year, be grateful that you're not having to pay taxes on your breasts.
Yes, or keep them covered for free.
Keep them covered for free. Have your windows for free. However, you are going to have to pay taxes on your booze.
Yes. I mean, I'm not an expert on taxes.
I'm an expert on booze.
Just drunk.
Also a drunk.
As always, you can contact us on Facebook at Crime and Time OTR.
On Instagram, we are Crime and Time OTR.
On Twitter, we're at Crime and Time OTR.
And our email is crimeandtimeotr@gmail.com. Email is where you will want to send us cocktail suggestions, things
topics
you want to learn about. Yeah.
Or just say hi.
Or just say hi.
And we also have a new Patreon page. Yay. If you want to buy us a drink.
Buy us a drink.
So that is...
Patreon.com/crimeandtimeOTR.
And we're going to be offering some perks for our patrons.
Absolutely. I'm excited. See you there.
Thank you for listening.